some say you need to wait 10 games to really get a true sense of the championship table. But here at the Tireless End, we fervently believe in the worthiness of a two-game season. Here we are, top of the table, Reading FC flying high after a second consecutive win in the championship under Veljko Paunovic. 2-0 it was against Barnsley in what was really a game of two halves. We'll get into that. Discuss the latest transfer news and preview the weekend game later on. Welcome to the Tireless End podcast, episode 234, with your host, Mark Mayo. And joining me this week, Simeon Pickup, the editor of the Tireless End. How is it going, mate?
I'm very well, thanks. Just wondering if we can end the season on points per game at the minute, or if it's perhaps just a little bit too early for that.
Well, we joked about it last week, to be fair, and actually, with the week that has happened since then, it maybe is a bit more likely. So let's see how that one goes. Adam Jones also is joining us this week. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. 6 points out of six, and you can't really complain, really.
Well, we'll find a way. we'll think of something, maybe, in the recap, which we'll get into now. As I say, the mailbag is always open for the tweets and the Facebook questions, which we'll get into later. Then we'll have news bites and the preview. So before we do that, a quick word to thank our sponsors, ZCZ Films, who are sticking with us for the new season, and everyone on the Patreon subscription campaign. A massive thanks to everyone who puts their hand in their pocket for a little virtual tip every now and again, which is very much appreciated and is being well spent, I suppose you're probably glad to hear, on certain bits of new equipment and everything, particularly in the video section. So we'll keep you posted on that on the Tireless End Twitter and Facebook and everything. And in the meantime, let's talk about a victory. Reading 2, Barnsley 0.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So a bit of a strange game this, I suppose, because Reading 2, Barnsley 0 sounds like a pretty straightforward win, but it's not really how it turned out. Yaku Mato with the close-range header to get Reading off the mark in the second half, then Michael Olise late on with an absolute belter for his first Reading goal. Love to see that. And Sim, let's talk about Olise first, because he really is the huge good news story out of this game, other than the championship table, obviously. Michael Olise providing the most passes of the midfield, the most touches of the Reading midfield. He won more of his duels than any other outfield player. He made the second most tackles, actually, and won the most fouls. So it was a really good game for him to show his stuff, and Paunovic kind of getting involved with the tactic side of things for him as well.
Yeah, and what I really liked about him was just his initiative, basically. What you often see from other attacking players in this kind of game is someone maybe kind of going hiding a little bit or being marked out of the game and basically just looking a bit anonymous. And I think you kind of saw that with Swift and Ajara to a decent extent. But with Elise, he was a lot more proactive, a lot more positive. He was trying things a lot more than other players. He was really trying to come up with different ideas. For example, dropping deep into the midfield to try and get on the ball and get Reading moving a little bit when otherwise things weren't really happening. And for an 18-year-old, that shows a maturity that you don't often see, to be quite honest with you. You see them maybe show it in bursts or maybe little bits of skill, like that really good goal he scored, but you don't often see players that young taking that kind of initiative. And that really does show what a talent we have, that he's already at that level at this young age, and hopefully with more regular game time and kicking on with the real confidence boost of that first goal, he can only go on to bigger and better things.
Adam, one of the things I was most impressed about with Olise is that he's not he's not a one-trick pony. He's not someone you put out on the right flank and he cuts in with his left foot, and that's basically he's an iron robin sort of player. He's good at that job, but that's his job. He's not like that. He is a player who you can put him into a deep role in midfield and he'll find time and space in amongst the more physical players. He can play out wide and put a good ball in. He can probably play him behind the striker, although we've not really seen that so much. So is this a case with Paunovic that he's got a really perfect player here? And with the 4-2-3-1 he's playing, he's actually got a few players that can move into different positions and just give Reading a few more options now.
Well, yeah, I think versatility, especially this season with the reduced squad depth at the moment, I think is absolutely key. He can play in centre attack and midfield. He's shown that before. I think he started off there on his debut against Stoke. Obviously, we saw on Saturday that he could play out wide and also a bit deeper as well. And I think we saw that he could play a bit deeper in the, I think it was the pre-season of 1920. I think it was against Extremadura or something. And he showed that he could take the ball from deep and actually make something happen. Now, obviously, we've got the likes of John Swift, Ovi Ejaria, who can also make things happen. But it's always good to have that third man who can go in there and do something. And as I said as well, with the reduced squad depth, it's absolutely key that we have, you know, versatility. I mean, it's the same with Araruna, who can play centre mid and right back. He reminds me a bit of Gunnarsson with the way that he can play centre back and right back. And also with Richards, who can play left back, left mid. But yeah, with Elise, we've got, we're starting to get the full package with him. And I think the games that he's played in before has been very beneficial to him, the experience, because he already looks like a seasoned pro to me.
Well, there's a good mention of Richards there as well, actually, because we've, as you say, we've seen with Elise the love that he's been getting. But Omar Richards also got a hell of a lot of love for his performance against Barnsley on the weekend. And Sim, for you, why was this? Was this a game that Richards, was it a particularly difficult game for him, or did you feel like he just kind of took control and was a very professional performance?
Yeah, very professional. And I think the thing about a fullback in this kind of game, when they're going up against a very aggressive pressing team, you're going to see teams like Barnsley try and pin them against the touchline and really try and get in their faces, force an error and things like that. They did that to Araruna on the other side. I think he didn't always handle it too well, nothing too dangerous. But the thing with Richards is that he just seemed mature and confident in that kind of role, in that kind of situation. And it's not always about just kind of protecting your flank and the defensive, the overt defensive side, or bombing down the left. It's also just about a general composure when you're a defender. And again, he's a young guy, he's coming through, and you need him to show that composure. And if he can keep showing that, then he could make that spot his own on the left, because he hasn't had that proper kind of really consistent run of games in the last couple of years, because he's had to fight off a beater and Blackett. And hopefully, if he can kind of build on what he did on Saturday, then he can really nail down that spot.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? He's gone from having two other left-backs to no other left-backs, basically. We've got Ethan Bristow and Imari Samuels as academy kids coming through, but really, you know, when you're the senior pro in that, even though we probably do see Richards as a young player, it's his to lose. It's his position. And it's good to see Pavlovic kind of trusting him for those first couple of games in the league. And hopefully this is a spell of form that we can see him on. So you mentioned high press there, Sim. And it was really responsible for why this game was such an unusual one for in terms of the stats and in terms of Reading's play. No shots for 66 minutes, I think it was. And then afterwards, I think it's kind of interesting that five of our six shots were from inside the box, the other one being Michael Elise's goal. So what was responsible for this complete dearth of goal-mouth action for the first hour of the game? Was it that Barnsley played particularly well and then the sendings off changed the game? Was it that Reading were very patient? Were they perhaps trying to walk the ball in too much? Ada, where did you find that Reading were kind of going wrong for that first hour?
I think it was mainly down to Barnsley. I mean, we were being pinned back quite a bit as well by their high press. I think we struggled with that when they had 11 men on the pitch. I think we did struggle a little bit. But I think there was only one real occasion where I shouted shoot at the screen. And that's a good sign, really. I don't think we were trying to walk the ball in. I don't get the impression that a Pavlovic team will try to walk it in. You know, you just look at Michael Elise's goal. You know, he was confident enough to take that on the volley, and rightly so. But, I mean, I felt like it was only a matter of time, really, in the first half before we conceded. But to our credit, we managed to ride out the storm. And then the red card completely changed the game. But when they went down to nine men, when we were 1-0 up, you know, spaces started to open up. And it's clear that, you know, if they had kept that press up for 90 minutes, I think we would have struggled a bit more. But no, to our credit, we rode out the storm and managed to get the win. And that's all that matters.
Yeah, and it was interesting Sim, that you look at the stats for Barnsley, is that they had 7 shots in the first half and only 2 in the second half. So I suppose it's, aside from the sendings off, I suppose you could say, what did change from half to half for Reading to get that ball over the line?
To be honest, I think it was just a case of getting a bit of luck, to be quite honest. But I don't want to say luck too much, but when you've got someone like Mato who can just come on and make that instant impact that isn't necessarily in keeping with the flow of the game, then you've always got a chance. And it did just kind of turn the game. I don't really want to say that the first red card was the key moment that changed it, because we didn't look too good for even when Barnsley were down to 10 men, to be quite honest with you. But when you do have that kind of, that little moment that you can get Mate to come on and get that all-important goal, and you had the chance right before it as well, of course, it just changes the game, and it does kind of just give you that bit of boost and that confidence to go on and push on, really.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the question that we'll never know the answer to. The question that is kind of the elephant in the room for this one is that, would Reading have won without the sendings off? The first red card at 42 minutes, Reading scored then at 67. The second red card for Barnsley came at 68 minutes, and then Elise scored again, 76 minutes. So, yeah, as you say, there was that long period with 10 men where Barnsley were certainly in the game. Chasing the game, however, with 10 men and then obviously with 9 men is virtually impossible for a team like Barnsley to do. But I suppose, Adam, the question is, do you think Reading would have won without the sendings off? Because Barnsley were, as you said, better a bit, or a bit better than we perhaps thought they were going to be. They maybe are even a team with that sort of tactical setup, if they can get it right, or a team that will comfortably stay up in the league. Jury's obviously out on that, but do you think Reading would have won without these sendings off?
I think the key question, as I said, was, would they have kept up for 90 minutes? Tim Deller pointed that out, and I think he's absolutely right. Maybe we would have nicked a winner with Mate on the pitch, because I think he was brought on really at just the right time. I think it was the 59th minute for Josh Laurent. I thought that was a brilliant substitution. And like I said as well, we weathered the storm very well, considering the threat that they had with the press and all that. And I thought it was only, I mean, under a different manager, we may have conceded. And I thought it was only a matter of time before they, you know, before we were going to concede. But yeah, you could definitely tell the difference between 11 and 9 men. You know, you look at Puskás's shot late on. I think Son Eluko, when he came on for the last 10 minutes, he got a lot of joy down that left-hand side. And there also seemed to be quite a bit more space in the middle as well with John Swift. So yeah, that's the $1 million question, really. I mean, only God knows really whether we would have got the win.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that it's just one that Reading, for now, I suppose it's kind of a case where results and performances are kind of in the balance as to which one's good at the moment. The performance was decent and improved. The result was perfectly fine. So that's all good. Let's hear from Belko Paunovic now, his quotes after the game. And then when we come back, I want to talk about the League Cup defeat to Luton in the week, and how, I suppose, with Yaki Mate, you just said coming off the bench there, how Paunovic's sort of team choice and selections have been going in the first couple of weeks in charge.
Obviously happy with the result, happy with the outcome, but we have to know that it wasn't that easy. I think we had a very solid, very good team in front of us. During the first 45 minutes, during the time we played 11v11, it was a very, very good hustle from both teams. We had to match up their intensity. We had to match up their consistency in style of play. But we were also consistent with what we were doing. We were organized. We were focused. We were waiting for our opportunity to run behind. And when we settled on the field, I think when we started to do that, that's how we provoked and changed the game with a red card in that 1v1 play with João with our centre back. But all that came because of the great organisation and great spirit of the team. I think the prelude to that game changing moment was the fantastic defence from and performance from our whole team and whole defence when we were actually defending inside of our box, our goal. That block led to a counter attack and exposure to the first red card of the game. Then the game changed, they changed. In halftime, we made some changes. they also adjusted. So it was hard for us, even when they played with 10 and 9 players, it was hard for us because they are a very good team, and I really want to congratulate them for their spirit and what they brought today in the game. But at the end of the game, especially in the end of the second half, I think we found the ways how to get there and how to score goals. Set pieces were important once again today, and moving forward, we believe that this is one of the tools we can always use.
Well, it certainly was Yakumeto who was the difference maker, as that patient approach paid off. And with that Luton game, it was interesting, 1-0 defeat, knocks us out of the Carabao Cup in the week. In terms of analysing the game, I mean, Reading never looked too threatening. Played the thing that I'm kind of want to talk about is the weird team that got put out with Mark McNulty and Sam Baldock as the wide attackers. We've kind of seen that in pre-season. Temo Watson and Felipe Aruna playing, but Watson as the centre mid and Aruna as the right back was kind of an interesting one with that. And Sim, is this kind of this? I suppose it was. You could say it's poor performance and a poor result. Does that kind of underline what is the big worry for Reading now, which is that first 11 plus, you know, a couple of the subs are really decent, really happy with them. But when you scratch past that, there isn't much to go on.
Yeah, there's some decent players in that B team, but you have to be playing them in the right position. And that was the thing. To put out a half-decent 11, you had to play so many players out of position. You had to put Baldock and McNulty out wide. You had to put Watson in there in the midfield. And when you put that all together, I think you get a team basically that isn't that coherent tactically. And it was always going to find it difficult against Luton. It's all right having decent players, and Baldock could be useful, for example, over the course of a season, and McNulty might get a few goals off the bench. But if you are playing them in any different position because you don't have cover in certain positions, you're not going to get good performances out of it.
And Adam, with this Luton game as well, were you disappointed to see that he did effectively just go with that B team that Sim mentions, a team that I think was perfectly worthy to play? The thing that I felt was a bit disappointing was the substitutions in the subs bench was just the academy kids, basically. And that's nice. You get a couple more names on the honours board. But when you're 1-0 down at home to Luton in the League Cup, I don't think it particularly hurts to have, you know, Ajaria, Zhao come off the bench for the last 15 minutes just to see what you can do.
Yeah, I agree about the subs. I think it would have been quite good to have some of the first team players on the bench. But in terms of the starting 11, I don't really have any complaints with the starting 11. I thought it was good that we went out with a B team, as you say. And I don't really place the blame on anyone, really. I'm not that angry. But I guess it was a little bit disappointing to see none of Puskás, Baldock, Aluko or McNulty score. I mean, those are four forwards, really, who probably should have done better. But I guess I also have to consider the system that we played. And I think the other thing which you mentioned was the Watson at centre mid and the Aruna at right back. For this game, I would have swapped the two to see Watson in his natural position at right back and see how he did. Because that would have showed us if he'd played at right back, if he was good enough to compete with Aruna, and whether we do actually, now with the Edom's kind of longish term injury, we actually need a right back. So it was a shame and maybe a bit of a waste of an opportunity not to see Watson at right back. But apart from that, I don't really have any complaints with the Luton game. It was good to see some of the second string players. I don't think Aluko performed that badly either. And, you know, he could be an asset this season. But no, I'm not really that disappointed at all. Obviously, it would have been nice to play Manchester United in the next round. But no, I wasn't too disappointed at all.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's not a cup we're going to win. So it's not. It's never been a cup that Reading, for, you know, since the 90s, have had any real sense of success in. So we can chalk it off, and as I say, it just leaves that little lingering doubt about the squad depth. But with the Barnsley win, the first team is absolutely fine, and we can keep chugging with that with a week's break before the next game. So that's all good, and we will go into the mailbag now, where we'll talk about more things that are good.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Okay, I might have lied then. This is a bad thing that starts with, and it's Alistair asking, with Andy Yeardom looking like he'll be out for the long term, are you happy enough with Felipe Araruna as the starting right back? Well, yes, that is one thing that we haven't mentioned so far, is Andy Yeardom has a knee injury. Paunovic saying on the weekend that he has an injury in his knee, which will keep him out for a considerable time. We're still trying to determine what is going to be the end of his recovery. It was definitely a bummer for us, he said. Obviously, a man who spent a lot of time in America with his use of language there. But yeah, I do feel that Araruna as right back is absolutely fine for second choice. Is it fine for first choice? I think realistically, Sim, we have to say the jury's out, because we've only seen him for, what, like 5 games now? And ultimately, you know, the risk of going in and signing like a right back on loan or something, it's a nice idea. But if that takes away funds from signing a more important position or better player, then it kind of, it is better to stick with Araruna as the main man.
Yeah, I would say the problem there, though, is that we are going to need him as a versatile player. As Adam said earlier, he's kind of similar to Gunnarsson in that he's versatile. He can cover centre midfield and right back as well. And you can just tell that we're going to get through a lot of centre midfielders this season with, imagine if, say, Laurent gets injured or Rinham Hota gets injured, you're going to need another option there, and you're going to want Araruna to cover there as well. So it does make sense to bring in another right back. That's not necessarily a massive dig at Araruna, who could very well be fine there. And I wouldn't say he's done particularly badly there. He seems pretty decent on the ball and everything, but add in a specialist there and it will just give us that vital bit of depth, basically. And the thing about this system, this kind of 4-2-3-1, whoever's playing off the right, probably Elise at the minute, but whether Riquelme comes in, for example, you're going to want someone cutting in from that side. And the requirements on that right back overlapping are going to be really big, just to stretch the play and really offer you some width there. And it's one thing to say just shoehorn in Araruna, for example, who might do a decent job, but you're going to lose a lot tactically without a specialist attacking, confident right back bursting down that side that Yeardom can do really well. And maybe Araruna can do that, maybe he can't. At the minute, I would feel basically just a lot more comfortable with someone else coming in, just a bit more of a specialist, a bit more reliable, essentially.
Well, I think it depends as to how long Yeardom's out for. If he is out for 9 months, like worst case scenario, then yeah, the idea of going into the loan market, picking up a young player who you might not play him the first choice, but he is just there, as you rightly say, if Araruna needs to come into centre mid, then you can play him 15, 20 games a year, and that's absolutely fine. But if Yeardom's only a case of a couple of months, I think we're probably best served bearing, you know, holding on for that and seeing how we get on. Obviously, January's never too far around the corner, so we can always think about it then. And the two unfortunates asking, were the team initially unprepared for Barnsley's pressing game? Should we have adjusted the style and played it long more often and over the top to counter this? Adam, how's your sense on, talking tactically, Paunovic's flexibility has been, well, I suppose he's displayed it on occasions, but did he display it with this, or was it just a case that he was happy for us to go for that 90 minutes and almost tie a Barnsley out?
Yeah, there is the question of whether they would have kept up for 90 minutes. I think playing from the back at first, because Barnsley were full of energy from the kickoff, it wasn't working at first. But I think if we would have played it direct and played it long, we would have had to ensure that these direct balls would have been accurate, because if we would have just hoofed it outfield, then, you know, Barnsley would have just come back at us. And I think at points we needed to retain the ball, because Barnsley, they did look at times, definitely early on, they looked threatening on the ball. And I think the worst thing we could have done was hoof it back upfield and then let them come back at us. So I respect the wish, probably Paunovic's wish, for us to keep the ball for as long as we could. I like the soft fouls as well throughout the game that we won as well. I think that was all good for ball retention. And, you know, if we've got the ball, then the opposition can't score. It's as simple as that, really. So, but yeah, I do agree that it wasn't working at first, but the direct balls, they need to be accurate. And I think with Morrison, maybe his passes aren't that accurate, long balls. But yeah, I think that's something that Paunovic needs to work on, and something that, yeah, we do need to have flexibility. And it's good that we have a flexible manager to come in and give us that plan B, plan C, plan D.
Well, the worst case scenario is we end up with a Yap Stam sort of situation, which, you know, as it's certainly in his debut season, Yap Stam's tactics worked, but he didn't have that plan B or C. And we ended up just kind of, it was boring, really. That was the main problem. We were getting certain results, but it was the case that when teams like Barnsley came with a good game plan that we couldn't break down, we were struggling to do that. And obviously, you know, the red cards maybe made this a bit of a different scenario for Paunovic, helped him along a bit. But we do have to avoid being a team that is stuck to one system and one way of playing. I'm not too worried about that right immediately. But, you know, it's something we have to watch out as Reading fans, because it's ultimately integral that you get a plan B going, because the Championship is such a difficult league and you play so often and you're going to have to change players, and there's not a one-size-fits-all division. Lee asking, is John Swift a luxury we can afford to lose, especially if we're bringing in some wide players, as that means Elise and Ajari are maybe shuffled into the centre? Sim, I suppose the thing with John Swift is that he's not started the season particularly well, so the focus will come onto him as you know, someone who we can sell and make some money on, and then turn that can be turned into new players or some looseness on the FFP. Perhaps, you know, perhaps I've changed my mind on this, because at the start of the year I was kind of thinking, yeah, we can sell him and that's good. But if we are genuinely going to put together a playoff tilt, I think a player like John Swift is someone that you probably need, because we're not going to replace him with someone as good, I don't think. Certainly, if, you know, we sell him for 8 million for say, well, I don't think we're going to go and sign a £5 million centre mid. I think the money will be spread out. So I don't know. I just don't think that we want to be breaking up this midfield almost so soon.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a lot to offer, and it is very difficult to get another player in who is capable of not just scoring goals and getting assists, but he does have a big effect on games. Obviously, not quite as much recently. He's had a quiet start to the season, as you say, but to be fair to him, he is kind of readjusting to an old position. It's not easy to just kind of click back into an old role and play as a number 10 again. It's very different from what he was doing for an awful lot of last season, which was picking the ball up deep and kind of finding that bit of space and controlling games from a deeper position. What he's being asked to do now is to pick the ball up higher up to find the space, rather than being the person to find others in space and then make something happen. And it's difficult to do that. And he is going to need practice. He's going to need practice to get his connection going with other players in the midfield, because it's a different kind of two behind him, with I'd say a more functional two with Laurent and Rinomota, and it might take a few weeks for that to really click. But we do have a talented player, and it's not easy to replace him. Give him a chance, basically, and I'm sure he'll come good.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's such a long season, and personally, I'd like to see him drop a bit deep and put Rinomota as the number 10. But that's something we'll have to leave up to the manager. Another man who is finding his place in the team, Philip Little, asking, where does Mate fit into this team? Last season's top scorer, yet I can't see him taking one of Elise, Swift or Jarius spots in midfield, or displacing Zhao up front. I mean, it genuinely is a perfectly legitimate question to ask, and I think it is really good. But it's such a sign of luxury that we're getting asked these questions, because I just, for years we've been asked, who on earth are we going to play up front? Or why is this player playing? They're awful. Now we've got a situation where Yaku Mate is, as Philip says, last season's top scorer. And I think he's absolutely right. I can't see him taking one of Elise, Swift or Jari's spots or Zhao's. So, I mean, for me, Adam, I'm just really happy with Yaku Mate being an off-the-bench man.
Yeah, same here. I think he offers something different on the wing. You know, he can play on the wing and up front. I think the starting three as well, behind Zhao of Ajaria, Swift and Elise, they're quite similar in some ways. So it's good to have Maitre to come off the bench and make that impact, which, as you can see, he did last Saturday. I think he's definitely someone worth keeping hold of. He scores goals, and whilst he doesn't have that obvious real quality, he adds something to the team, and I think he'd be an asset to any championship team this season for sure. And also coupled with the fact that he's also a threat in the air, and I keep on describing him as a marginal gain, and he's becoming more than a marginal gain at the moment, because he contributes vital goals and he brings something different to the team. So it's fantastic to have the likes of him and Puskás, and I'd even say even Aluko on the bench to come on and make an impact.
Yeah, it's all about competition as well in the team, and we know that injuries are going to happen. We know that we're going to have stints of long games and that rotation will be necessary. So, I think Maitre doesn't have to fit into this team at the moment. I'm happy that he can fit into basically any of those midfield spots, barring the... I wouldn't put him in behind the striker, but as a striker or winger, I'm happy with him as a player that he is now. And I suppose it's the levelling up, you could describe it, of Reading FC. If we are going to have a good year, from a player like Yakub Maitre being the dependable striker every game, starting him and him going on good runs and getting some good tallies, but ultimately not enough to fire you to promotion, to becoming a substitute or a rotational player behind someone who does get that 20-goal, 25-goal season, I think is the difference that you can get from a team that finishes 14th to a team that finishes maybe 5th or 6th or 8th or 9th or whatever. Final question of the week then. Loyal Wall asking, early championship impressions. In my opinion, we all know it's too early in the season, but you can only play what is in front of you. Results suggest a happy squad and ability to grind out results, something that we've missed. Early impressions of the league then. I'm just looking at the table now, and apart from Blackburn, who thumped Wickham 5-0 on the weekend, no team has scored more than 4 goals over the opening 2 games. And that is complete contrast, Sim, to the Premier League, where everyone seems to be scoring 4 goals for fun. So I suppose with the Championship, it just shows to me, you've got a lot of teams there who have played 2 games, won one of them 1-0 and drawn the other 0-0. There's 4 teams that have done that. This is a league that, particularly without fans, is showing itself to be very, very tight this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly with that lack of fans, as you say, it does essentially level things up in terms of home advantage and away advantage as well. And previously you look at some teams and say, right, they've got a really good chance of winning at home because of their home support. Take that out of the equation and it makes it that bit easier for other teams to go there and get a result. I don't want to say we wouldn't have won at Derby, for example, on the opening day if Derby had had a packed crowd, basically, but it would have been that little bit more difficult, and maybe it might have been 2-1, or it would have been a lot more kind of a lot closer. But when you do have these extra conditions, it's up to teams to basically make the most of it, and that can throw up results. And the longer this current situation goes on without fans, maybe the longer with surprise results and the surprise teams at the top end of the table.
Well, that's the thing for me, is that with the Derby game, as you say, the Derby fans might have acted against Reading. And with the Barnsley game, if Reading had got 66 minutes into the game without scoring against Barnsley, or without having a shot against Barnsley, there's a half a chance that the Bielski Stadium crowd would have got a bit frustrated. And I'm not saying Reading fans are bad or anything like that. I think that we wouldn't be blamed for getting a bit frustrated in such a scenario. But it happens. These are the things that you have to consider. Reading, for disclosure, as we move on to the next part of the show. 4 goals scored, none conceded, 6 points on the board. Only Bristol City and Luton have also won both of their opening games. You've got Nottingham Forest and Derby down in the teams that haven't picked up a point yet. And Preston and Cardiff not picked up too many points themselves. Also, Brentford 1-1, lost 1. So, early days so far, but plenty to go on for what is looking like, again, a very tight season. Can Reading change that at all? Can Reading push themselves forward? We'll be talking about the transfer window now as we head into News Bites.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films. showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So as we go through news bites on this Monday evening, we have notifications set up for the Reading FC official Twitter because there is news afoot. There are transfers potentially happening any minute now with Rodrigo Riquelme, the Atletico Madrid winger, talked about in previous weeks on the show. This is a loan move that's been long in the works, primarily because Atletico Madrid have been aiming to let him go on loan after he signed a new long-term contract with them. So I think it's just been the details of that have been hammered out. He's been on trial with Reading for the last 3 weeks. He's been staying at the Medeski Stadium. Hopefully they've put him up in the hotel because Y19 is pretty chilly. And yeah, this is a good signing, I think, Sim. It's a situation where we have not many wingers. He's a winger. He's highly rated. He was meant to be going to, Atletico Madrid fans thought he was meant to be going to a better team than Reading, let's put it that way. So we can get him in. It's not going to cost us a huge amount if he's not so good, but it's a good opportunity to get one of Europe's, potentially one of the highest rated players in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. And he fits into this team as it is, while also adding something a little bit different. The problem I kind of have sometimes with the call to get in more wingers is it can be difficult to bring in a winger who also fits into this kind of system that Reading play. We don't have out-and-out wingers like, for example, a Jimmy Kebbe or a Glenn Little, that kind of winger that really wants to stay out as wide as possible and really stretch the play. We want wide players who are going to drift in field a little bit, get involved with the striker, get involved with the number 10. And I look at the profile of Riquelme, and obviously there's not a huge amount to go on, but the suggestions are that he's a lot more kind of dynamic, essentially. He's that kind of player who can drift in field. He's got that change of pace to come in field and link up with other players. And you could see him fitting in basically anywhere across that three, particularly on either side. And I know we've got a Jara and Lisa there at the minute, but we talked earlier about cover, and if you can get some real competition going, or even if it's just that at first, at least he's coming off the bench, he's trying to make an impression, and he gives us that extra idea in the last 20 minutes of a game while he gets used to English football and regular senior football, then that only adds an extra dimension, an extra bit of quality to the team. But I would caution fans to just not be too kind of overexcited at the start. He's still 20. I think he's played one or two games for Atletico's senior team. So he's not someone who's necessarily going to hit the ground running and score 5 goals in his first 5 games kind of thing. We do need to be a little bit patient, give him time to bed in. But if you do get that right, if you do get that kind of adjustment period right, then we do have a really exciting player on our hands. And I'm excited just talking about it.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? There is always that chance that the words Ola John are flashing up in my mind in big capital letters, a player who was really highly rated abroad and who came to Reading as the chance to prove that he has the mettle to do it at a good level and didn't succeed, really, didn't manage it. So that's the risk that you have with loanees. The good thing is that, you know, if they go well, you have a good season out of them, good 6 months out of them. Doesn't cost you much. If it doesn't go well, we've got plenty of other players, really. We're not going to have to play, in my hope, 40 games a season. Another player who is being strongly linked with Reading, and this one really caught me by surprise, Adam, is Everton centre-back Lewis Gibson, reportedly joining on loan. He spent some time at Fleetwood last season. And this one, as a centre-back coming in, we don't look like we're going to be playing 5 at the back, so unless Tom Holmes or Tom McIntyre is going to be moving out on loan, or we're about to sell Liam Moore, which would equally surprise me, this is a bit of a random one, I would say.
Yeah, I do worry for Tom McIntyre and Tom Holmes. I think that's the only negative, really, of this signing, because I want to see both of our academy graduates flourish this season. I think it was promising that both of them were on the bench against Barnsley, so that was pretty good, with Tom McIntyre coming back in after international duty. But what I would say about Lewis Gibson is there are great reviews from both Fleetwood fans and from Everton fans. I think he'll definitely impress people if he comes here. He'll take people by surprise. because some Everton fans want him in the first team. And even though he's only been in League One, I think he will definitely impress people. Obviously, he did very well last season. And if I'm right, in the regular league season, he kept, I think it was 4 clean sheets in 9 games and conceded just 6 before the playoffs. And obviously, we won't talk about the playoffs because I think they lost about 6-3 on aggregate. But you know, if it doesn't cost much and if the loan fees and agent fees and wages aren't too high, then I think it can only be a good signing. If I could have a little kind of word on Riquelme, I think he seems very promising on the surface. It makes sense financially. And it really does sound exciting. So I think it'll be interesting to see what he can do. Hopefully he can be reminiscent really of Diogo Jota, who was also on loan from Atletico Madrid to Wolves before Wolves signed him permanently. And look at him now. I think he just signed for Liverpool. So, no, it can only be promising. Both of these signings seem like they're low cost. I'm wary, obviously, of wages and loan fees and agent fees. But if there's no hidden costs, really, then I think it can only be good 2 signings for Reading. I think financial fair play is absolutely paramount in this situation.
Yeah, and one final transfer rumour to cover before we move on there. We mentioned earlier Andy Yeardon's injury. Perry Ng, the Crewe defender, right back, as it turns out, very highly rated at Crewe in the PFA team of the year last season, won the Crewe player of the year before that. And Sim, this is a highly rated, I think he's about 24, so relatively young player. And I think he's got Keir as his agent, so that would probably tick a few boxes for Reading. But is that the sort of place, I suppose, if we have to go into the right-back market, we did talk about it earlier, but going in and getting a permanent option, I think going into the couple of leagues lower and finding a good young player is probably about as good as we can hope for, really.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's really highly rated. And I think I asked Gabe Sutton, who's basically an EFL pundit who knows everything about the lower divisions, and asked him how good he is. And he really was raving about him, saying he's basically the best right back in League Two last season. And it does really look like a really promising signing. And he's a relatively young guy, and hopefully we can get him in on a permanent deal and he can make the step up. Then he could potentially go on to surpass Yeardom. And the thing is, you go back a couple of years ago when Gunter was kind of like the established right back, he didn't have that challenge and he did kind of stagnate. I don't want to say that Yeardom would stagnate, but it is important to get that competition in for him. And if you're talking about bringing in a relatively young guy from the lower leagues who's going to come up and try and really impress higher up the divisions, then that could only be a good thing for Yeardom as well. And if you get that competition going between the two, then that suddenly becomes a really strong position for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's have a quick look at the other Reading FC teams before we go ahead and look ahead to Saturday's game. The women's team got off the mark with a 3-1 victory over Aston Villa at the Madstad. Amelie Eklund, Lauren Bruton and Farah Williams on the score sheet there. They next faced West Ham on October 4th, so 1 win, 1 defeat for the women's team in the Super League so far this season. The under-23s, they're now led by Mehmet Ali after Scott Marshall left. He's the former assistant, Scott Marshall. Not sure whether that's a permanent appointment, but he took charge of them. They've been beaten 4-0 by Norwich and 3-0 by Fulham so far. But as we've talked about on the show before, the team was really strict last year. There are loads of under-23 players got released. So the fact is they are going to do badly in terms of results this year. So we have to hope that that is not a sign of, you know, the players in that team being bad, but maybe they're just not ready. Maybe there's just not as much depth. So that's probably going to be how it is for the under-23s this year. They're next up against Villa on the 28th. The under-18s, they drew 3-0 with West Brom to start their new Premier League season. So, good-ish result there. They next face Aston Villa as well. That's on the 26th. So, Reading FC, they're also in action, the senior team, on Saturday. So, let's jump into the big match preview and talk about a trip to Wales.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So, be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Back to the Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff. No midweek game because of the Carabao Cup exit, and Reading go to Cardiff on Saturday, September 26th, 3 p.m. kickoff, as I say. And Cardiff are one of those teams that we talked earlier about how championships are very tight, teams, you know, picking up the odd result, and none of them really looking like they're absolutely on fire, certainly not as much as Reading are. And Cardiff fit that bill, really. One win and one defeat so far. 2-0 defeat at home Sheffield Wednesday, then a 2-0 win at Nottingham Forest on the weekend. Adam, this is a game, really, that it's a bit of an unknown quantity this early in the season, as Cardiff could turn up and be decent or bad or anything in between.
I mean, you're completely right. It could go any way this weekend. You know, you could see all results pretty much. You could see a Cardiff win, you could see a draw, you could see a Reading win potentially. So if anyone gets that on their Super Six, then I do sympathise with them and send my condolences. But I think with Neil Harris's side, I think he's done quite well. He did very well last season. I didn't really expect it, but I think they even got in the playoffs, and I think lost to Fulham, unfortunately. But I think the thing is, I mean, looking at their first two games, they lost at home to Sheffield Wednesday 2-0. Obviously, Sheffield Wednesday will be desperate to kind of get off the minus as soon as possible with their 12-point deduction. But I'm sure the manager will be very happy with their 2-0 away win at Nottingham Forest. And Nottingham Forest were also very close to the playoffs last season. We've got to keep an eye out for Kiefer Moore as well, who scored a brace. I think it was both in the first half. But I think the other thing as well is they sounded very defensively resolute as well in the second half, which is something we also need to be very careful of. And, you know, not just their attacking threat, but also what they're like in defence, and with that extra edge as well with Leandro Bacuna and perhaps Sean Morrison starting, we'll see what we can do. But yeah, I can see any kind of result this weekend, and I think I might sit on the fence and get splinters, to be honest.
That's the thing, only a fool will predict this game, and that's what we'll be doing in just a minute. The four-game epic battle of last season. If you've heard, they're getting a bit of deja vu now as we're previewing a Cardiff game. That is because we did have three draws and one win against Cardiff last season. One of those draws going to penalties, which Reading won in the FA Cup replay. So we're familiar with Neil Harris's team. We did get the better of them last season, has to be said. They're not a team, I mean, I was a bit surprised they got to the playoffs last year. They're not a team that I certainly don't rule them out of doing it again, but they are just in that mass where I think Reading probably are, of playoffs run, general speaking, would be good, but not expected because of the, you know, the quality of the league and the difficulties in doing that. So, Sim, how do you think that, I presume we agree that Reading are just going to set up the same way again?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest with you, I look at this system with Reading having a slightly more functional midfield too. As I said earlier, it's not quite as open and creative as it was with John Swift deeper last season, and the players like Swift, Ajara and Elise higher up. And I think it's set up very well to play away from home, essentially. It's got that bit more defensive solidity. It's got the attacking players essentially freed up to get on the counter more, basically, and get up in support of Zhao. And that worked really well against Derby, and I could see it working well again at the weekend as well. You look at a game like Barnsley, where we were kind of expected to have more possession being at home, and we didn't really do it particularly well. But I think going away from home, even though I am kind of worried that Cardiff are a decent side and they're going to pose a really big challenge, because of the way we're set up, I think we've got a really good chance. And I'd back us to get a decent result.
Well, let's do the predictions then. The prediction league is up and running after we all got the Derby result wrong. So Handbags picking up the 2-0 win against Charlton puts him on the board as the first man to get the 3 points. Myself, Ollie and Westy all back to win without it being 2-0. So that's a single point from us and three for Handbags. Sim, where are you going to say for Cardiff?
They are a decent side, so I was originally thinking maybe a draw because I do think they could cause us problems. But one thing I do keep coming back to in my mind is last two games we've, I think, conceded about four shots on target collectively, and I know we've done well to, say, be good going forward against Derby and having that kind of clinical nature against Barnsley later on, but we have been solid defensively, and because of that, I think we could get another clean sheet. So throw that in, and I think we can come away with another 2-0 win.
Lovely stuff. Very happy with that. Adam, what are you saying for this one?
Oh, I'm not going to be as optimistic this time. I think we've done very well defensively, as Sim said, over the past couple of days. But I think this time we might concede, and I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, that's the similar line. I'm going to go for 1-1 because at some point something has to give. And to be honest, a 1-1 draw I would be perfectly happy with at Cardiff. I think there's a good chance we'll score first. But Cardiff, a team, they you only get to the playoffs if you've got a good amount of mental toughness. They're effectively that same team again this year. So they will, you know, find it within themselves. That first win last weekend can always be a big shot in the arm. So really, as you know, as we say, a terribly tough one to predict. Two games into the Championship season, yeah, it really can end up meaning nothing. And for Reading, we hope it does mean a lot. But, you know, there we go. Just to have a quick look, actually, at who was leading the Championship after two games last season, just to show that it, as much as we like to think it'll be something meaningful, that it really isn't. If you do go back, yeah, you had Sheffield Wednesday and Charlton were the two leading teams at this point last year, with Reading in the bottom three. So at the very least, we're not doing that this year, which we have certainly been doing a little bit too much over the last few years. So that draws to an end this episode. Sim, thank you very much for popping on.
Thanks for having me.
And Adam as well.
No worries, always a pleasure.
And this show will be back next week. I won't, because I'm meant to be on holiday, although circumstances around the country may end up putting me in charge of this episode next week. So we'll see about that. But Reading, have a good week off, and then a trip to Cardiff to look forward to, which really, after two wins in two games, we can be as optimistic about as we have ever been, really. Reading have started a season well. We haven't done that in the last few years. We have a manager that looks to have a grasp on the team. We have a first 11 at the very least that is scoring goals and keeping them out. Let it continue. Come on, you Arse. You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail.